Access to Democracy is made possible thanks to the following organizations. Sheridan and Dulas, PA, a family and criminal defense law firm that has been serving clients in Dakota County and throughout Minnesota for over 40 years. Ranked a Tier 1 best law firm by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. Sheridan and Dulas are here to help you in your most difficult life circumstances. Established in 2007, 45th Parallel Distillery was among the first 50 micro-distilleries in the United States. Based in New Richmond, Wisconsin, all aspects of production occur at their facility. If you're interested in learning more about the 45th Parallel Distillery, please check their website and plan a visit to tour their facility and taste their spirits. TrueStone Financial, with locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin, has proudly served its members since 1939. TrueStone engages, educates, and supports its members to ensure they have the tools to empower their financial well-being. TrueStone Financial, your neighborhood credit union. Learn more at TrueStone.org.
We're back with another edition of Access to Democracy. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you join us. I'm your host, Bill Raker. Today, we're going to start the program off a little bit differently, and you'll see as we go through the program the theme that runs through the conversation that I'm going to have with our guest. So the first image I want to bring up and have you take a look at it, see if you recognize what this cute little critter is, or perhaps where this photo was taken. Now, if you haven't guessed it yet, this is a fisher, and the photo was taken in Alaska. Now, let's bring up the second photo. It may be difficult, may be a challenge to figure out what this is a photo of, but it's a reflective photo under the Millennial Park in Chicago. If you've been there, you may recognize it. If you haven't been there, this may be a new experience for you. Our third image that we're bringing up is of that of a picturesque, serene view of a couple of leaves floating on water. Beautiful, beautiful scene. Now, you might ask, what do these photos have to do with today's program? Well, today's program is about conservation. And to explain these photos and the work that he does in helping the conservation projects that he works on is today's guest, Mike Kutnick. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate it.
Now, Mike, before we get into the program itself, would you like to say just a word or two about each of the photos that we brought up the program with? First, about the fisher in Alaska. What was going on there?
I'd be happy to. At the time, I was taking a bit of a break from a project that I was doing up there to help the National Park Service create a sort of a kiosk environment with a map as the central focus, an interactive map that people could click on various spots of interest on that map and then get pictures and videos and descriptive text and that sort of thing. Something that could eventually have put online, but they didn't get to that stage. And after having been up there once before, the second time I came up, I brought my son along and we had a little bit of fun. And on one of the latter days, we went to a place called Exit Glacier along the near Seward. And it turned out to be an all-day adventure. And on the way back, there just happened to be this little fissure peeking out between those rocks along the trail. It was very fun.
Yeah, you got a cute shot of
the
little critter. Now, the second one that we brought up was in Chicago, Millennial Park.
Yes.
Tell us what was going on there.
So, not far from our hotel, actually. We were only three or four blocks from Millennial Park. But they have this big, in a mathematical sense, it's sort of a torsion, three-dimensional object. It's probably 25 or 30 feet high. This is quite a few years ago. That was a spring break trip with our kids. And you wouldn't know it unless I told you, but both myself and my son are in the reflection. We're standing on the concrete, and I'm just shooting up at one of these surfaces, and you get all of these reflecting spaces from the different curves in that shape. It was really kind of surreal.
It's a unique photograph.
It is very.
And the third one, serenity was the word that came to mind when I saw that, Mike. How did that inspire you?
So I like all four seasons, but if I have to pick one, it's fall. And my best friend and I are both avid photographers, and we will often go up to the UP or northern Wisconsin and just go walking and taking pictures. And that happened to be at a place called Bond Falls, just across the Wisconsin border into the Upper Peninsula. And it was just at the right time in the right place and the right lighting, and I got the shot I wanted.
It was fascinating and beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
You're very welcome.
Us. Yeah. So, Mike, we're going to talk about the work that you do, the passions that you have, and I'll explain a little bit for our viewers what it is, but you'll have the opportunity to fill in all of the things that I missed.
Sure.
Your work and your passion, Mike, involves conservation, land and nature conservation. What you do is help communities, cities, government agencies, organizations, whomever, to designate, to plot, to protect, to manage, and to enjoy conserved land. Is that basically what it is that you
land
do?
And water,
and
actually,
water.
Certainly.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the projects that you've been involved in. But before we get to that, Mike, maybe share a little bit of your background, your career history, and kind of what brought you to the work that you're doing today.
Sure. I was born and raised in eastern Wisconsin, a town called Manitowoc. Shipbuilding was its claim to fame back in the day. I went to undergraduate school, graduated from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse in computer science. Minor in math, was very active in vocal music there. Worked for the train company for a few years, started taking prerequisites for the MBA program. Eventually went down to Madison and finished a degree in marketing. Worked for Division of Control Data, which we share, for about 8 years in an office that they had in Milwaukee. And that business then, as you know, wound down. And so I needed to find something else. And there was an by that time I had gotten a product management job in Greenwich, Connecticut, and so I was looking from there, ended up working for Allen Bradley in Milwaukee, industrial controls manufacturer, which they use a lot of the equipment at the Pine Bend facility that you and I are both on the CAC for, and then ended up going to graduate school a second time in Madison because I'd gotten very interested via my best friend who was doing volunteer work up at Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. And we were both computer science graduates. We were helping them, and they kept saying, GIS, 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 you guys would be perfect at this. And GIS, by the way, is Geographical Information Systems.
I was going to ask, you need to explain what
GIS
is.
So think about Google Maps as an example, or Apple Maps. And it's just on steroids. So as an example, the city of Eagan, Dakota County, both use GIS technology to do things like map parcels, map potential routes for emergency response for fire trucks, tree inventories, and all sorts of parks and rec stuff. All of those voting district maps that you see, all of those are generated with GIS. But it's used everywhere. So McDonald's uses it to figure out where they should place their next store that they're going to develop, as an example. Or UPS and FedEx both use it to try and optimize where they're going to have trucks and which routes they should send things on, that sort of thing. So it's used by all manner and size and types of organizations.
And it's really impactful on the lives of everybody, and yet we don't know much about it, but people like you do, right?
So the company that I retired from in 2019 is called ESRI, stands for Environmental Systems Research Institute, and they have a vast lion's share of the market for geographic information systems technology. They operate in over 100 countries, I think, and including Eagan and Dakota County, many of the state agencies in Minnesota, as are many other states, and lots of federal government agencies as well.
But you focus on a particular niche of the use of GIS,
don't
you?
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Tell us,
my ambition, my ambition when I went to grad school the second time was to do modeling, you know, predictive modeling, simulation sort of stuff with GIS. And so I, when you decide that you're going to do modeling, the first decision you need to make, the biologists like to say, are you going to be wet or are you going to be dry? And wet basically means you work with water stuff. And I was always drawn to water, being playing in the water, boating, fishing, all that sort of stuff. So that was a natural decision for me. And shortly after I went back to grad school, a grant opportunity came up to fund a research assistantship so I could get a reduction in tuition, but also get some pay for working on a project that eventually I was able to get multiple years. And after I did my research, I got to publish the results of that in a pretty prestigious Canadian Journal of Fisheries and Aquatic Sciences. Say that three times fast.
So what's the focus, the feature in your research?
And this is illustrative of something that I learned that became very important in my career, is the notion of being able to bridge two different disciplines, two different technologies, that sort of thing. So I used GIS in a very simple way, but it hadn't been applied to the problem at hand, which was trying to predict at that time which inland lakes zebra mussels would infest.
Zebra mussels is something people in Minnesota know about, right?
Right. And it's just one of the many invasive species that we have to deal with, right? So the idea was to apply other models that other biologists had created and bring them in a spatial context. So I worked with about 225 lakes across the state of Wisconsin, and we knew what the water chemistry and other characteristics were of those lakes. So I could generate a map that said they're less likely to be productive here and much more likely to be productive elsewhere. And, you know, within a fairly short number of years, inland lakes were being populated with zebra mussels.
And so your work played a really significant role. Maybe it continues to play a role in how the resources are managed to contain the zebra mussels.
Right. It was amazing to me in the first few years after this paper was published how many times it was referenced. And it was only because GIS had been applied only very superficially in that arena, so to speak, for several years. And then it caught on and got much more regularly used, so to speak.
Well, that's one example of your,
correct,
your work, right? So you develop software, programs, applications that all of these different agencies and entities can,
right,
use in a variety of different ways. I think one of the projects that I was looking at when I was preparing for this had to do with the river project that you were working on?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we have a picture, I think, of something that's related to that.
Yes.
You want to tell us about it?
So in Wisconsin, there is something called the Lake Superior National Estuary and Research Reserve. And it started to begin to be developed, to propose. It's a federal program. There are today 30 of these estuary and research reserves around the country. And it was a five-year process to get them to be nominated. And then the federal government, NOAA is the agency that administers that, has to approve it. But they need all sorts of maps for that process. And so I volunteered to create all the maps, do all the spatial analysis that were required, and help people understand and make decisions on which were the best. They started with 51 candidate estuaries, and they had to narrow it down to one. And as a result of my efforts in that process, I was awarded the plaque that you'll see the picture of from something called the St. Louis River Alliance, which was one of the community action groups that was involved in advising the process to figure out where the estuary and research reserve should be, how it should be focused, what should its priorities be, so on and so forth.
So that was an award that you got for the work that was done
Correct.
There? Yeah, you played a really key role in that big project,
yes.
right? So, was there, do we have a picture of a marker that designates where that area is?
Actually, those markers are a little bit different, and it bridges into a little bit one of the other projects that I'm working on. For some of the conservation work, especially for private land trusts, which I'm involved in a lot, I'm doing a project right now for the Nature Conservancy as an example. A land trust, when they're trying to protect land, whether it's something that somebody wants to get them or they're trying to figure out a way that they can protect it, the land parcels, the ownership parcels, are really important because that's what they have to work with. They have to work with a landowner who is willing to either have a conservation easement put on it. In other words, they give up some rights to that land, but because they want to have it be conserved in perpetuity. Or they actually buy it in what's called fee simple. But the boundaries, where the boundaries are of those properties, is really important. And what a lot of people don't know is every parcel, basically in the world, but certainly in the United States, and a lot of other countries are more sophisticated about this than we are all measured so that you know where they are, not only in their what their shape and size is, but where they are with respect to each other. And so there are these survey monuments that are scattered around the country. There's hundreds of thousands of them in the United States. But if you look at the deed description for your property, it always starts at one of these monuments and then angles and distance to get where your actual property is. And then they do the angles and distances around your property. So you need to have some understanding of how parcels are actually defined and mathematically determined so you can use them within the context of GIS software to do analysis with them. And in my case, what I do is attach a bunch of attributes. Are they adjacent to a lake? Are they adjacent to existing conservation land? What are the land cover? Is it forestry? Is it agriculture? Is it developed? Those sorts of things. And then I develop dashboards with all that data so that a conservationist can sit at a screen with a browser and just say, oh, I want it to have this much forestry. I want it to be this big, just little sort of pick lists. And then it just shows them a map of where all those places are and the characteristics of those so they can make good decisions about which lands to conserve.
This is a fascinating discussion that we're having here, Mike. It's just really amazing. You've mentioned so many things that I have no idea of, and many of our viewers perhaps don't either. Like the parcel of land that my house sits on, there's a marker somewhere on that land that helps define what my boundaries are, right?
Well, and that's one of the things that's kind of interesting about it. The monument isn't necessarily, and almost never is on your land, unless it's a big rural property that happens to be big enough that one of those monuments happen to fall there.
Yeah.
So a surveyor has to go to a place where there are one of those monuments and literally go to all of what are called the courses to get from where one of those markers are. And there's usually one at least every quarter of a mile,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're originally were placed in something called the Public Land Survey System. And that is literally squares, if you will, that across the country.
So let me work on this just a little bit more. So if I see someone out in the field or somewhere and they have this tripod with what looks like a telescope on it and a plumb line down to the ground, there's a marker under that plumb line. Is that what that is?
They are either trying to find one that they will then locate something else, like your parcel,
mm-hmm.
or they're putting one there. As if you do a major construction project, whether it's a road or a bridge or whatever the case might be, there often is a survey marker specifically placed there so they can do accurate, very precise measurements for construction purposes. But even that monument is tied back into the Public Land Survey System.
So I'm just thinking how disadvantaged Lewis and Clark were because they didn't have your GIS software to work with, right?
In those days, they literally measured those distances for these what are called sections, mile square areas, with chains. In fact, there's a survey term for a measure of distance called a chain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so we saw the award that you got for the work that you did with the St. Louis River Alliance,
yes.
Right? That's a special award. I think we have a couple of other examples of some markers or monuments.
Right.
That one is from the U.S. Geological Survey.
So the USGS monument is very similar to other kinds of monuments that you will see that are put up for different purposes. Again, some of them might be for construction project. If you go in a breakwater for a lighthouse, as an example, you'll almost always see one embedded in the concrete someplace so that can measure from there to do all the precise measurements that they need to do for that purpose. USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, will often put those markers on high points as a way to do what's called triangulation, to be able to do accurate survey measurements between various points in a landscape that can then be referenced in maps and help make for accurate mapping as well.
So we also have an example of a monument or a marker from the Department of Interior.
Correct.
Yeah, so we'll show that to our viewers. What's that one designate?
Right, so that was more of a memorabilia isn't the right word, but when you go someplace and you buy something in memory of that place that you went to.
Oh, a memento?
Memento, memorabilia, that sort of thing,
okay.
Right. So there's a place called Logan Pass in Glacier National Park in Montana. I've been there a few times now. That was on a trip with my son. And Logan Pass is a high point that you can literally drive over. It's paved roads, but it gets up to about 9,000 feet. And then there is a place at Logan Pass that they've measured a precise survey location for. And they sell duplicates, if you will, mm-hmm. of these as gift items in their gift store. That's also up at their little visitor center there.
So that'd be an interesting thing to take home and say, I've been there, right?
I've been there,
I've
exactly.
Been there. That's
right.
What that's all about.
Right. Yeah. And I have several of those. I have one from Acadia National Park in Maine, as well as this. And I actually, anytime I see one of those, I take a picture of it and something of the scene in the area. And I have it in my mind someday that I'm going to create something called a story map, live map, interactive map, I should say, with all these locations that I visited and a little bit of an explanation of what these survey markers are about. And it'd be like a little bit of a tour of these places I visited and these little survey markers.
That'd be a great project.
When I get time.
When you have that completed, you can come back and right. Show it to us and tell us all about it, Mike, because I'm sure there will be a memory that you'll recall when you work on each little piece that goes into it,
definitely.
Right? Yeah. So what's the geographical area that your work has been applied to? I mean, you talked about some things you did in Wisconsin. Where else has some of your work been applied?
Well, it's interesting first to note that all of those opportunities were because of people that I had come to know in other contexts. I didn't go out searching for these. They sort of came to me or through personal exchange. So the one project in Alaska was at the Anchorage Visitor Center for the Park Service. I've done these other kiosks at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center in Wisconsin. There was one at a time that was in Sault Ste. Marie. There was one at the aquarium in Duluth. But most of my work over the last year since retirement have been with land trusts again. One is with Gathering Waters, who is a service association of multiple land trusts in Wisconsin, over 40 of them. I do work for them and some of their member land trusts up in the northern part of the state and in the Milwaukee area. In Minnesota, it's a little bit different. There is one big land trust, Minnesota Land Trust, and a couple of other big ones, someplace called the Conservation Fund, and the Nature Conservancy, probably the biggest land trust in the world, works in many foreign countries around the world. And they've contacted me just recently to do one of these decision systems like I did for Gathering Waters based on parcels, attaching a bunch of different characteristics to those parcels, and then making decisions about what, parcels to focus on for reforestation. They call that project Minnesota Million. They're trying to go into areas that aren't forested now, may very well have been forested prior, but to plant a million trees across Minnesota in the places that are most advantageous to do so, with the driver of being trying to get carbon capture.
Mike, it's so fascinating and so important work that you do,
yes,
that you're sharing with us. And it's so widely used in many applications that enable us to enjoy the land and water that's conserved by part of the work that you do.
Yes.
And because your work is so valuable, I know you've been recognized with many awards for the projects that you've worked on, but I think that there's one particular award, the Alan H. Miller Award, that is very significant and it's very rare, but you have earned it. Tell us about that.
So that was awarded by the Wisconsin Land Information Association, which is a professional association of about 500 individuals across the state of Wisconsin that work broadly in the field of land records. A lot of them are GIS people, but they're surveyors and people that deal with zoning and registers of deeds and a lot of other those. There are city people, county people, federal, academics, so on and so forth. But it's the sort of the cream of the crop of the professional tier of people that work and apply GIS. And I was given that award. It's generally a lifetime achievement award. And it acknowledges the service that I had to the association itself, but also what I brought to involvement in WLIA for over 25 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You certainly earned it with the work that you've done. Mike, your career that you do in the use of GIS is kind of unique. Do you know how many people around the world maybe that do this kind of work that you do?
God, that's a really good question. I would easily hundreds of thousands, if not millions.
Really?
And we have several people just at the city of Eagan that work with GIS.
But not in the context that you do.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, they use it. Like you said, there could be millions of people that use it, as you explained earlier in
yes.
the program. But the kind of consulting work and development work and planning work that you do is really kind of unique and has to take place before these other users can get value from it. And we got about a minute and a half for you to explain that.
That's a much shorter list. And again, getting back to one of the comments I made earlier, the value that I bring to land trusts these days is helping them sort of elevate their game, so to speak, with how they apply GIS. And to be a little bold, without exception, the people that I work with appreciate the work that I'm doing and come back to me with other projects to do. And it again is that notion of being able to bridge the conversation between the field biologists that are looking for conservation opportunities, or restoring lands is the land trust that I was referring to in the Milwaukee area earlier, how to deal with other kinds of invasive species on the land. So to be able to help them come up with a plan for how to do it is something that helps them figure out a path to be able to use GIS more productively, but not have to implement it themselves.
Mike, you've done a great job of explaining a really deep area where very few people know about the kind of work that you do. You've done a great job explaining that, sharing your experiences with our viewers. Thank you for being our guest today on Access to Democracy. And again, we appreciate the work that you do. Congratulations for the awards that you have earned. And have a happy holiday.
Thank you very much, Bill. You as well. And thank you for the opportunity to talk with you.
And thank you for joining Access to Democracy today. And remember, there's more Access to Democracy on YouTube and on accesstodemocracy.com.